Well, with that, this, of course, is the place where everybody's used to me saying the same thing every week, which is, turn with me, if you will. In this case, it's the book of Shemot, or Exodus, chapter 25. The parsha starts in the first verse. Well, it starts in the first verse, but the name comes from the second verse, simply because the first verse says, in this case, it's Yedabar Yahuwah al Moshe, and spoke Yahuwah unto Moshe. And here's what he said: speak unto the children of Israel that they take for me, what? An offering, a free will offering, a particular contribution, a gift, in the Hebrew, terumah. So that's the name of the portion, the offering. Of every man whose heart makes him willing, you shall take my offering. And again, it's terumati, in that case, my offering. And then he goes on to say, here's what it is. This is the offering which you shall take of them: gold and silver and brass. We've already mentioned that we know the word for silver, and that is, of course, kesef. And in the case of gold, it's zahav, gold, and brass, and other things too: blue and purple and scarlet and fine linen, goat's hair, ram skins, dyed red, seal skins, and acacia wood. Oil for the light, spices from the anointing oil, and for the sweet incense, onyx stones, stones to be set, for the ephod, and for the breastplate that we'll talk about in subsequent Torah portions here. And then I think this is probably the key, the summary verse, the capstone for the entire portion. Verse 8 in chapter 25 says, and let them make for me, li, a sanctuary. Actually, the word there is a mikdash in this case. That I, well, it says in the English translation, that I may dwell among them. And literally, it's be tokam. Well, we know be can mean in. And it's interesting. Some of the sages will point out, you know, we're used to translating it in the English as something like, let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. And the real Hebrew scholars will say the grammar here is almost a little bit unusual. It's almost a little bit pained in that it says that I may dwell in them. And yet, I'm going to suggest, hey, you know, if you think about it, it means precisely what it sounds like it says, right? Let them make me a place so that I may dwell literally in them. And it seems to, this is one of those places where I'll a lot of times stop and say, okay, we're talking about the so-called Old Testament. You know, I'm not particularly wild about that terminology because it makes it sound like it's old and done away with. And that, of course, is one of the teachings of the, the whore church. When in fact, it's not true, of course, because not only is it line by line, precept by precept, the foundation for everything that comes after, but of course, the Mashiach too said he's not changing a single teeny bit of it, not one yoda tittle. And if he had, obviously, as has been laid out, he couldn't have been the Mashiach anyway. So there's something in here that really is key. And even though people will say, oh, the rest of this whole Torah portion has to do with all kinds of stuff that seems really detailed about this ancient structure, the Mikdash, the sanctuary, the Mishkan, the tabernacle in the wilderness. Oh, and we've been taught, well, it's different now. You know, he dwells among us. Well, is that really true? It's tough for him to dwell in a really nasty place. We need to make sure it stays cleaned up. And there's a lot of uncleanness, certainly, in what's called the church. But the interesting point, I think, is the following. There's a lot of detail in here that we therefore tend to gloss over. And I'm going to try to go through it tonight, not because we can build it or because we have a complete understanding of all the elements, in some cases even some of the words that might have to do with various types of animal skins or something. We're not 100% sure of anymore. We're not absolutely positive we even know what these animals were. And there's a lot of other interesting stuff in here. But the key, I think, is this. As we lay all this out, is it just possible that there are still things that are important for us to know embedded within here, especially if he is going to be able to dwell in us? all of the elements of His Word are important. And perhaps the less important something seems to us, the more important it is that we really take a look and read it and try to pray about it and think about it. Okay, with all of that, he says the following in the next verse. According to all that I show you, remember he's talking to Moshe at this point, the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all the furniture thereof, this is how you shall make it. So the question, of course, is pattern. That's an interesting word, too. It was said to be shown to Moshe. And in order for him to build this, it makes sense to me. You can't really just describe it with words. It's a lot easier. A picture is worth a thousand words. If he has seen it and is able to describe exactly how to construct it, that makes sense. Almost, although I know this isn't a literal translation of the word, but almost like what we're talking about here is a description of a blueprint, this pattern. Now, following this, of course, we're going to go through the pattern and at least the description of the blueprint itself. And it begins like, let me make one other comment up front, too. These are free will offerings, right? And you got to ask the question, although we probably know the answer. You got gold, silver, brass, blue, purple, scarlet, fine linen, goat's hair, rams, acacia wood, seal skins, oil, light, spices, all kinds of stuff. Where'd they get all of this? Well, we know that one of the things that the Creator was really important to point out to them was that you're going to go plunder the Egyptians before you leave. And they're carrying all of this stuff, probably wondering what they're going to do with it. And now we're going to find out. Isn't it cool? Almost like he had all this planned. Which leads me to one more observation that I wanted to make before we continue with the blueprint or the pattern for this. And that is a question that comes up. Most of us tend to think that the Torah is given in chronological order. And large parts of it are, but there are certainly parts that aren't. So here's the abiding question that comes up, and there is some, there is no shortage of discussion on this score. How about this incident that we're going to see described after the giving of the Ten Commandments, if you will, the Deborim anyway, and all of the Mishpatim, the instruction there in the wilderness, all that Yahuwah has commanded we will do, they say, and then it turns out they don't. So the question comes up, well, you know, did that happen before or after all of this stuff with the Mishkan? And the way the story unfolds, it's going to end up being a little bit of both. We're going to see a repetition of some of the elements here as to what they're going to do and then what they did. And so we don't know for sure what the exact sequence of events, the chronology was. I guess the bottom line to my mind is he knew regardless. The Creator understood and had made provision, and indeed we see that He had made provision long before any of this could have possibly happened, before they even left Mitzrayim. So that, to my mind, is the key element of this, regardless of whether the incident with the golden calf happened before or after. Something is going to go on. He knows it, and it's going to be important that they deal with it. Now, with that in mind, I want to make one other comment about the old stuff that's all done away with, and now He dwells within us. And when we talk about some of the things in the news this evening, I think this will make more sense as well. But I can't help but wonder, looking at the stinking, fetid mess that the world is today, and how much of the so-called church, and I refer to it as the whore church for that very reason, is so far from what is written that you got to wonder, how would it be possible for him to dwell amongst such a fetid mess, would he? It does make sense, then, that we would take a look at the things that are described here. And yeah, maybe there's an element of spiritualization in all of this. Whenever I see numbers and things, and we'll go through some of those, I tend to think there's probably more there than meets the eye, too. But the pattern is important, and the pattern is still a blueprint for us. All right, make this ark, he begins, out of acacia wood. 2 cubits and a half is how long it's going to be, and 1.5 cubits the breadth thereof. So it's 2.5 cubits by 1.5 cubits, and it's 1.5 cubits high as well. All right, full stop. Two interesting things leap out in this verse. One, ark. Well, this is the Ark of the Covenant. This is starting at the inside out, right? He's talking about this Mishkan that's going to be made, this tabernacle, and he begins in the inside and works his way out. That's kind of interesting. And, of course, it kind of harkens back to the same concept of getting the inside cleaned up. You'll overlay it, he says, with pure gold. Zahav that is a pure. And interesting, this is tahor. Tahor and tamei. Oh, yeah, that's that same word that we used to be, well, not just clean, really, but the opposite of profane. So this is literally, in more ways than just a metallurgical sense, pure gold. Within and without, you overlay it, and you make upon it a crown of gold all around. So for those of us that are kind of nerdy inclined, one of the things that's real clear is this ark is going to be an absolutely wonderful Faraday shield. There's no electromagnetic force going to get into this thing from the outside. And it may also be a capacitor, or it may not. Kind of depends on whether the inner outer shields are connected. Probably they are. It's going to be carried with four rings of gold put in the 4 feet thereof, two rings on each side of it. And you make staves of acacia wood, overlay them with gold too. So the wood stakes are going to go through the two rings, and that's how it'll be carried on either side. The staves shall be in the rings of the ark. They shall not be taken from it. And the sages, Rashi in particular, says, if you read this carefully, he takes that to mean not ever. These rings stay on it, and the staves that are used to carry it stay in there too. They're not to be separated. Inside, you put the Ark of the Testimony, which I will give you, and make a covering for this Ark, too. And interestingly, that word there is Kippur. It's actually Kippuret, but HaKippurim, right? Kippah, you've heard that term, a covering. There's going to be a covering over the top of the Ark. 2 cubits and a half, just like the length, and 1.5 cubits the breadth. Yep, same size as the box itself. And make 2 cherubim of gold. Beaten work, you make them on both ends, the 2 ends of the Ark cover. Put 1 cherub on one side, 1 at the other side. They're going to be out of a single piece that you make them. That's a no mean feat. And they shall spread out their wings on high, screening over the Ark cover with their wings. And they face one another. There is also a claim that the sages make that, hey, you know what? When this thing is carried, just like the cherubim face one another, so do the people who are carrying the ark. Put the ark cover on the ark, and in this, again, you shall put the testimony that I give you. And there it is that I will meet with you, and I'll speak with you from above the covering over the ark, from between those 2 cherubim on the ark of the testimony, of all the things which I will give you in the commandment unto the children of Israel. So this is the place where the rest of the instruction will be forthcoming. You'll make a table too. Now we're talking about other furnishings here, working our way out of acacia wood. 2 cubits shall be the length thereof, and 1 cubit and the breadth thereof, and 1.5 cubits the height thereof. So we got this table overlaid also with pure gold round about. It'll have a crown of gold. Think of it as kind of a lip if you've seen the tables that have something on top so that a pencil or whatever wouldn't roll off. Make unto it a border, hand breadth round about. Make a golden crown. And this one too is going to have 4 rings of gold in the rings on the 4 corners, and there'll be staves for that. They're also covered with gold, and that is how it will be carried as well. Other furnishings, you'll make the dishes thereof, pans, jars, bowls, wherewith to pour out. They too, in the inner area here, as we're describing it, inside out, will be made out of pure gold. You'll set upon the table showbread before me always. So, bread, lechem, will be on the table. And, of course, you've probably heard this. This is often, for that reason, called the table of showbread. Now on to the menorah. Now this actually gets translated into the English as candlestick, but this is one of those places where I think it's probably a good thing to learn and to use the Hebrew word. It's a menorah of pure gold. A beaten work shall this candlestick be made, even its base, its shaft, cups, knops, and flowers, all of one piece. There'll be 6 branches going out from the sides, 3 on one side, 3 on the other side, and 1 in the middle. There'll be 3 cups that are made like almond blossoms in 1 branch, knop and a flower, and 3 cups on the other side, knop and a flower. So you end up with 6 branches going out from the central area. And in the candlestick, four cups made like almond blossoms and flowers. And a knop under two branches of one piece, knop under two branches of another piece, for the total of six branches going out from the menorah. The knops and their branches shall be of one piece with it. The whole thing to be one beaten work of pure gold. Now, here's where I often stop and think, I've heard a number of things about this. Now, I'm not a metallurgist, so I can't really comment, but I do know enough about pure gold, and the weight of this thing is described, and the fact that really pure gold has an issue, and that is that it's very malleable. It's ductile. It's one of the most ductile, malleable, in other words, relatively easy to work. You can pound it really thin. You can stretch it. You can do all kinds of amazing things with gold. But it's also, for that reason, soft. And it turns out, the sages will point out, or the metallurgists will point out, that if you make this thing out of pure gold, an interesting thing happens, and that is it sags. Literally, it won't stand up. So there's an element to the pattern here that says there's more to this than meets the eye. Furthermore, the level of skill that almost any metallurgist will tell you that it takes to start with one thing out of pure gold and then beat it into the shape that we're describing here, the branches, the knops, the flowers, the almond blossoms, the whole nine yards, with three branches on each side and the one in the middle, wow, basically it can't be done. Well, not without some divine assistance on a number of fronts. Okay, you'll make the lamps seven. They shall light the lamps to give light over against it. The tongs thereof, snuff dishes, also pure gold. Of a talent of pure gold shall it be made with all the vessels. So just for reference now, there are a number of different definitions. You'll see how much does a talent of gold weigh, and do we know for sure? Answer is no. There seems to be quite a bit of variation in the weight or the mass of one talent of gold. Suffice it to say, what we do know is it's a lot. Okay, probably. If I had to guess, I'd say the thing that probably makes the most sense to me is it's probably on the order of 60 to 70 pounds, probably 50 pounds minimum anyway. But even in a repressed, manipulated market, 50 pounds of gold minimum times 14 troy ounces or more is a whole lot of gold, between 500 and 600 ounces. So we're talking about something that even at suppressed prices today would be $500,000 or well over amount of gold. See that you make them according to the pattern, which is being literally shown to you there in the mountain. So we're going to work our way out. Now, you're going to make the tabernacle, the Mishkan, with 10 curtains of fine twined linen, and this blue, purple, and scarlet with the thread, and cherubim, the work of the skillful workman, you'll make them. The length of each curtain will be 28 cubits. Each will be 4 cubits wide. So 28 cubits long is essentially pretty close to around 40 feet long. The breadth is 4 cubits, or about 6 feet wide. They're all going to have the same size, and you're going to couple them, 5 curtains to one another. And 5 curtains to one another. So you're going to take these things and couple them together. Loops of blue upon the edges of one that's the outermost in the set. And same thing for the second set. Put 50 loops in one curtain, 50 loops in the edge of the second set. And the loops are going to be opposite one another. There will be 50 clasps of gold to couple the curtains, one to another with the clasps, so that the whole thing literally can make this covering for the tabernacle, can make the surrounding, I guess is probably the best way to put it, of the tabernacle itself. Make curtains of goat's hair for a tent over the tabernacle. 11 curtains you'll make there. Each of those will be 30 cubits long, 45 feet or so. The breadth, again, 4 cubits. The 11 curtains will all have one measure, and you'll couple 5 by themselves, 6 by themselves, double over the 6th curtain in front of the tent, and again, 50 loops in each of the sets, 50 clasps. This time, they're of brass. Put the clasps in the loops, couple the tent together so that it may be a unity. And as for the omer hanging part that remains, the half curtain that remains shall hang over the back of the tabernacle. The cubit on one side, the cubit on the other side, which remain over the length of the curtains, shall hang over on this side and on that side to cover. So there's some overlap that'll prevent rain from coming in and the like. Make this covering for the tents out of ram's skin, dyed red, and put a covering of seal skins above. Now, seal skins, if I'm remembering right, is one of those words that you got to ask, you know, where are they getting seal skins? And is that an exact rendering of what the original Hebrew word was? Now, okay, we don't necessarily know for sure. Now, here's the place where I'm going to stop and say, now we're going to get to these boards. You're going to make these boards for the tabernacle out of acacia wood standing up. So the walls essentially are going to be supported by boards of acacia wood. They're going to be 10 cubits long and a cubit and a half wide, each board. Now, 10 cubits, right? That's about 15 feet, give or take, and a cubit and a half wide. Wow. 18, well, so call it 25 inches or so wide. That's a pretty wide board, right? Here's the big question. Where are they going to get all this wood? That's a lot of wood. And, you know, did they carry that out of Egypt too? Is it out there in the wilderness? Interestingly, this is one of those places I'm usually careful about things that are midrashic, you know, that are the oral traditions. But this one, at least, you think, okay, it's as good of an explanation as any. And it goes something like this. Yosef himself, way back in Genesis, seems to have planned ahead. At least this is the claim. And he planted a lot of acacia trees almost 300 years earlier. And so these trees have had a chance to grow up and become big trees in the time, as almost as if somebody knew they were going to be employed. Again, can't prove that, don't know that to be the case, but if you have the question, where are they getting all this wood? And acacia wood sounds like a good stuff to have, especially if you think about the size, right? These boards that are not only tall, but pretty wide. These are some pretty big trees. They would have taken a while to grow, and they probably didn't carry them with them. They're going to carry them from here on out, though. Two tenons in each board joined one to another. This is how you're going to make the boards. And 20 boards on the south side, 40 sockets of silver under the 20 boards, two sockets under each of the two boards for its two tenons, two sockets on the other board for its two tenons. For the second side of the tabernacle, north side, 20 boards as well. And also, again, 40 sockets of silver, two under each board. And for the hind part of the tabernacle, west side, six boards. And two boards you'll make for the corners of the tabernacle and the hind part. They'll be double beneath, and like manner you shall complete the top of the first ring. This is how they'll both be done for the two corners. So thus there'll be eight boards, and their sockets of silver, 16 sockets, two under each board. You'll make five bars of acacia wood, five boards for one side of the tabernacle, and five bars for the boards of the other side of the tabernacle, and the west side and the hind part westward. In the middle bar, in the midst of the boards, which shall pass through to end of end, you'll overlay all this with gold, make their rings of gold for holders for the bars, and overlay the bars with gold. And then you'll rear up the tabernacle according to the fashion which you've been shown up there on the mountain, Behar. Make a veil, too. Again, blue, purple, and scarlet, fine twine linen, cherubim, the work of the skillful workman, shall it be made. You hang this upon four pillars of acacia, also overlaid with gold, their hooks of gold upon four sockets of silver. Now, there's another interesting progression here, too, which is usually pointed out, and that is we're going to see this progression inside out, if you want to call it. It starts with gold and then silver, and then in the outer areas of brass. And there's also a place where essentially there's this interface between the gold and the silver, and then again between the silver and the brass, if you want to think about how you move outward. And for those of us that have a background in chemistry or electronics, all of that kind of suggests, there's some interesting stuff possibly going on here. But that's all I'll say, because beyond that, it becomes simply speculation. But I will mention one other bit of speculation, I guess, while I'm thinking of it. A lot of silver here, a lot of gold here. And isn't it interesting that one of the things that if you look at these, especially these noble metals, not only are they monetary metals, they have some of the most interesting characteristics in just about every way you can think of. Ductile, malleable in the case of gold. In the case of silver, it is the best reflector. It is the best conductor, both of heat and of electricity. Literally, among all the metals. They are considered noble metals, or at least gold in particular is. Silver will tarnish, but I have a kind of suspicion that this silver probably didn't. Can't prove that. There's also one other characteristic, or several other characteristics of silver that are particularly interesting, and that is it is one of the best antifungal, antibacterial, antiviral elements known. Silver has some amazing medical properties. It's why it's used in bandages and so forth, and it keeps down infections. What does that say? As we go through this, you're going to see there is a lot of association of silver with blood. And, of course, the life is in the blood. For now, I guess that's all I need to say about it. Other than, if you step back and ask the question, how much of what we're seeing here being described is a pattern that says here are things that are going to be associated with him being able to not only dwell among us, but dwell in us. And the noble metals and the elements that are associated with biology and with life and with blood. I'll just say it this way. I don't believe there's any coincidence at all that's being laid out for us here. All right, we're talking about this veil that will now separate. Hang up the veil between the clasps. Bring in thither within the veil the ark of the testimony, and the veil shall divide unto you between the set-apart place, the place that is called Kadesh, set apart, and the place that is most Kadesh, literally Kadesh Kodeshim, the Holy of Holies, or the Holy Holy. Kadesh Kodeshim, the most holy place. And the ark cover on the ark of the testimony goes in that Kadesh Kodeshim. You'll set that table there outside the veil, and the candlestick over against the table on the south side of the on the side of the tabernacle towards the south, and then put the table on the north side. And you make a screen for the door of that ohel, that tent, out of, again, blue, purple, scarlet, fine twine linen, the work of the weaver in colors, and make for the screen five pillars of acacia, also overlaid with gold, hooks of gold, and cast five sockets, in this case of brass, for them. Interesting. You'll make an altar out of acacia wood as well. Now, the altar, in this case, is going to be 5 cubits by 5 cubits square, and the height is 3 cubits high. So this altar is essentially about, 7.5 or 8 feet or so on a side, and it's a full 3 cubits, 4.5 foot high. So it sits well up above the ground, not quite the height of a man. And on the four corners, there will be horns of the altar. And they'll be of one piece, and that'll be overlaid with brass. And it'll have pots to take away its ashes. It'll have shovels and basins and flesh hooks and fire pans. All the vessels for this will be made of brass. And there'll be a grating network, too. And upon the net, you make four brazen rings in the four corners. Put it under the ledge, round the altar beneath, and the net may reach halfway up the altar. Make staves for the altar out of acacia wood. Overlay them with brass as well. And the staves will be put into the rings, and the rings on the two sides of the altar. Again, this is how we carry such things. Hollow with planks will you make it. And it's also, again, according to the pattern that Moshe has been shown. So shall you make it. On the court of the tabernacle, on the south side, there'll be hangings of fine twine linen. These are, we're getting bigger as we move out, right? 100 cubits long on each side. Pillars thereof will be 20, sockets 20, also out of brass. The hooks of the pillars and their fillets shall be of silver. Likewise, on the north side, hangings, again 100 cubits long, and 20 pillars and sockets of brass, and also fillets of silver. For the breadth of the court, west side, there'll be hangings, they're half as long. So 100 cubits on the first two sides, 50 cubits on the east and the west side. Hangings on one side will be 15 cubits long, three pillars and sockets. And for the other side, again, 15 cubits, three pillars and sockets. And for the gate of the court, we'll have a screen, 20 cubits. Again, blue, purple, and scarlet, fine twine linen, the work of the weaver in colors, with four pillars and four sockets. So we're having this long description here of all of the elements of this thing. We're going to see, again, a repetition of parts of this. We're going to also see descriptions of the garments that are going to be worn within and of the construction as well. But here it is laid out for us the first time, before a whole lot of other, I guess you'd say, things that have the plot thickening occur. But as we wrap up the end of the portion, the last few verses here towards the end of chapter 28, it says, all the pillars of the court round about will be filleted with silver, their hooks of silver, sockets of brass. Now, brass is what? Brass is largely copper. It has some other elements mixed in with it so that it's a little bit more resilient, stronger than copper would be alone. But essentially, metallurgically, what you have here is, there's a difference. There's a silver and brass have electropotential differences, so there's actually a voltage difference. Interesting. I don't know what to make of that. I just pointed out. Because we, again, are seeing the pillars that are filleted with silver, they have hooks made out of silver, but the sockets are brass. The length of the court, 100 cubits. The breadth, 50. And the height is 5 cubits. Again, fine twine linen, sockets of brass. It wraps up and it says, all of the instruments of the tabernacle, the Mishkan, in all of the service thereof, and all the pins thereof, and all the pins of the court, shall be of brass. So we've moved from the inside to the outside. We're going to get the description of this thing that they're going to build in the wilderness where he can dwell among them from the inside out. And again, of all the things that we've talked about here, I find that to be kind of a fascinating element. Seems like if there's anything we take away from this, it's that maybe that's how we need to work on ourselves from the inside out. And then this verse that I already said I think is the key to the entire thing, right at the front. Let them make for me, in other words, a sanctuary, a mikdash, that I may dwell literally in them. And the pattern is what he's going to show us.